Hey guys, welcome to another episode of A Glass for Every Palette. I am super excited for today's conversation with our guest. You know, when I started this podcast, there were very, very few women or women of color that had podcasts that were wine-centric. And these ladies today were one of my favorites. Today, I am chatting with the women of the Swirl Suite. And the theme of our conversation is going to be collaboration. These women are literally on, I'm going to go with two different time zones and an ocean between them. So they embody the spirit and idea of collaboration. So welcome, Women of the Swirl Suite.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
How are you today?
We are. Well, I'm doing great.
I'm happy to hear that. You know, it's been, now that all this, you know, the world has kind of changed a lot, I think people are now recognizing that there have been all of these people of color, particularly women of color, involved in all these different spaces and aspects of wine that they didn't know. But I knew this podcast existed. I love this podcast. One of my favorite episodes was actually the first time the cheating scandal for the court. When that broke.
All we could say was, girl.
That was one of my, I was like, I wanted to count how many girls that could have been me. Couldn't have been me. But I love it because I've been, you know, for me, it's all about recognizing that anybody can talk about wine. And I think it's more comfortable for people to talk about wine in the context of things they already know. So for me, if you're going to, you know, describe wine to me, not using any wine terms. If you're into sports, tell me about the wine in the context of sports. If you're into cars, tell me about the wine in the context of cars. And I think that's such an organic way of meeting people where we are. So before, that was just a little teaser for the audience to get to know who you ladies are. So let's jump into this. Let's talk a little bit about the first experience with wine you had that you can remember, whether it was the wine itself or where you were, or who you were with. Talk to me a little bit about your first experience with wine. Sarita, do you want to go first?
Sure, why not? So hi, everybody. My name is Sarita Chavis. I am at Vine Me Up on all social media. I started out as a wine blogger. I was working at a local winery and I was starting to develop cellar palate. So I was only starting to crave the wine that was made at that specific winery. And I was like, I have got to change this. I've got to expand. So I started going to all of these free tastings in and throughout DC. And I started to blog about it. The wine blog introduced me to so many people in the wine industry. And that's what led me to Tanisha and Leslie and Glennis and all of us. We used to bump into each other at all of these wine events. And you know how Black folks do. We end up in the same, at the same table, same corner, whatever. And I, you know, this light bulb went off. Like, I have never seen this before. I've never seen a group of Black women speak about wine the way that we do. And that's how the Swirl Suite was born. So yeah, it was history ever since.
Oh my God. I love that. Okay. Glennis, do you want to introduce yourself to our listeners?
Well, hi everyone. My name is Glennis Hill. I'm on social media, most social media platforms as Vino Noir, Black Wine. And my alias on Facebook is Irie Wine, meaning all things Irie, everything's beautiful, when it comes to wine especially. I came to this space loving wine, as most of us do, but I got there from almost like a challenge, and I tell this story over and over again. So long story short, when I was challenged about, oh, that's what I poured in your glass, and I knew that's not what was poured in my glass, I went to the bar manager and we had a conversation and he was like, oh, you're right. You get a free bottle of wine. I cut that story very short because I don't want to take up too much time. So at that point, I realized that I did have a discerning palate and I started traveling to a lot of different wine areas in California once a year at a different season. And one of my sorority sisters said, girl, you need to be blogging about wine. I was like, what's blogging about wine? What are you talking about? So I did some research and I said, okay, if I'm a blog about wine and have my name attached to some, we might need some certifications. So the first thing I did was go to the Wine Bloggers Conference. And at that point realized, oh, there were two people of color there and I was one of them. And I was like, this is an interesting dynamic. So then when I started bumping into, like Sarita said, her, Tanisha, friends say, well, I got a friend from Chicago that does wine. And then we all started meeting up. I was like, yo, please come to this Wine Bloggers Conference. We need to add a little more melanin to the wine recipe. And that's pretty much how I started in wine.
Yes, melanin magic in the mix. Okay, so that is your start in wine. But do you remember like the actual wine that like did it for you, that like had that profound impact and like made you really think about pairings and all that stuff? What was that wine?
For me, it was a Cabernet Sauvignon, which is still one of my favorite grapes. And like you said earlier, let's talk about how it made you feel. It's bold, it's ripe, it's fruit forward with dark fruits. And I just like it the way it feels in my mouth. So Cabernet Sauvignon was the first. And I think when I had my first pairing on one of my trips to Napa, it was to Duckhorn. And they paired it with a Piave. And I almost had an orgasm. Girl, that thing was the best. I said, Jesus, these two were meant to be together. And they were meant to be together in my mouth. Let's have it. And so Cabernet Sauvignon and Piave, it doesn't necessarily have to be Duckhorn, but it was just the best pairing. I still serve that when I have guests at my house, a Cabernet and a Piave cheese.
Well, all right, then.
So that's mine.
A glass for every palate after dark. Okay. Sarita, how about you? What was your first memorable experience with wine?
For me, this is going to surprise some people because I don't talk about this grape very often. But for me, it was a big, jammy California Zinfandel. So I just picked up a Zinfandel. I was like, well, you know what? Let's splurge a little. So it was around $20. I forgot the brand, but I took it home, opened it up, and I happened to make a chocolate cake that weekend. So I had this chocolate cake. I was like, well, let me just sit down and watch my shows. And I had the chocolate cake out and I had the Zinfandel. And I said, wait a minute. Wait a minute. I didn't know this was a thing. I didn't know that this was going to taste. The wine was spectacular by itself. But then you add that chocolate cake. I was like, oh, my God. This is wonderful. Yeah. And it happened accidentally. If I can figure out how to pair other wines like I did that night, I was like, well, this is a thing for me. So every time I go to a wine shop, I'm thinking of what I can pair with that specific wine. So it was definitely a Zinfandel.
Oh, okay. Well, I am not a lover of chocolate, nor am I a lover of red wine with dessert, but I am here for it. I think that's why it's so important that when we discuss, especially when we're talking about like varietals that people, great varieties that people might not be as familiar with, it's really important that like wine goes with food. Like you might not like, you know, Gewürztraminer, but if you have it with the right spicy dish, it is life-changing. So wine and food pairings can totally change your perspective on a wine or a dish or both.
Exactly.
And what's magic about it is some people don't like specific wines. Like, oh, I don't drink Cabernet or, oh, I don't like that grape. But then you pair it with something that you actually do, like a food or a snack that you do, like it changes your mind.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. So I totally, totally agree that you might not like a wine, but if you have it with the right dish, game changer.
Yep.
Right.
And now joining us all the way from Paris, Tanisha, how are you? Welcome, welcome, welcome. I have followed your story for so long. This is a fangirl moment. So right now we are right in the midst of talking about that wine that first did it for us, whether it was a particular grape or producer or place or experience that we shared it with. What was the first wine that like did it for you?
For mine, it was actually Burgundy. I had the pleasure of being accepted to a wine program in Burgundy with the Burgundy Wine School. And so I went out there for, I think it was like 8 days to just go through Burgundy and the different regions within Burgundy and taste the wines. And in that program, I was there with Master of Wines and Directors of Wine Schools and Master Somms. And I was like, wait a minute, y'all are serious. This is for real. I remember even at the beginning of that program and people were introducing themselves. I'm like, hi, I'm so-and-so. I'm master of wine and I do blah, blah, blah. And oh, I'm master sommelier and I do this, this, this. And I was like, hi, I'm Tanisha. And that was all I had to say. That's it. Like, I don't have anything else to add.
You know what? I think that Tanisha's enough. I don't necessarily go around introducing myself with, I'm a studious girl. I've got a lot of letters after my name, but I definitely do not go around introducing myself. So you know what? If you are Tanisha, Tanisha is enough. But there may have been a moment where, you know, in a titled space, having a credential changed how you approached that. So talk to us a little bit about the moment where, like, you felt like you had a little sprinkle of magic to add to being just Tanisha.
It came about, and it's funny because I was actually in that seminar, that class, I was taking level 3 WSET. And my instructor was in this class as well. And he is an MW. And he was like, yeah, so you're going to be where? I was like, yeah, I hear you're going to Burgundy and I'm going to be there too. Yay. And he was like, oh, okay. But I happened to get there because I filled out the application because the person who they asked couldn't do it. And they were like, well, can you suggest some other people? Do you know anyone else who would be interested or who'd be qualified? They were like, oh, I know someone who would be really good to do this. And that person was me. And I was like, oh, you think so? And then they helped me with my application, filled it out, sent it in. And then they told me, yes, well, you're going. And I mean, the program, it was completely covered. All I had to do was get to Burgundy. They took care of everything. I ate and drank, where I stayed, all transportation. I just had to get to Bone. That was it.
Nice.
That was the game changer for me. Once I did that, passed the exam, went through that whole week, I was like, oh, wine is a thing. Like, this could actually be a life, a career. This could be something. That was it for me.
Girl, if I knew that I could make a career out of drinking wine and eating food and talking about it,
cheers.
So, you know, I think that it's really important for me. I always talk about it as some of the best ways to introduce new people to wines is to pair it with the food that they're already eating. And I think wine is a great way, and using food is a great way to bring people into something new using something that they're already comfortable with. And there's no better tool for that.
Okay, so the funny piece is I agree with two of the three things that you said, and it's the bridging of food, because that would be Sarita when it comes to in-depth bridging food with wine, because look at her laughing already. And I know you can't see Tanisha. She's probably cracking up too, because they know, ooh, when it comes to food, I'm not the most adventurous person. Now, for me, wine is it's personal for me. Whatever you like to drink, that's what you drink. I'm not going to say don't drink that wine with A, B, and C because it's not a good pairing. That would not be me. If you like it, I love it. You do you. However, for me, I'm more on the cultural side of it. I do believe that as women and men of color, our palates historically, not now in the 20th century. We are in the 20th century, right? Okay. Not, you know, at young age, we had sugared cereals. You put sugar in Kool-Aid. You did sugar. You had more sugar in milk and coffee. We weren't taught that, okay, how about you taste this in its natural state to see how your palate reacts to it? And from a cultural standpoint, I think that makes us unique in the wine industry, because there are a lot of people who only like sweet wines. Sometimes we get stereotyped by that. I've been to several several restaurants, and I say, can I see the wine list? And then they'll ask you, what do you like, red, white, or blue? I said, those are colors. Those are not wines, one. Well, do you like sweet or the ale? They'll call out a grape. I'm like, then I have to say, I stop and pause because I know I'm about to go until a different, I'm like, No, I ask for the wine list and then let's talk about the wines I say I might have an interest in based on, and it, sometimes it is based on what I'm eating. But for the most part, I am definitely one who it, my motto is drink what you like with whatever you like, even though there are some wines, if you're drinking, if you're eating heavier bolognese or heavier sauces, you might want to go with a wine with acidity that will handle that type of sauce. However, wine is so diverse. There's so many grapes. There's so many styles. Drink what you like. But when you want to be down home, you want to have a little Southern comfort with a little bourgeoisie, have some champagne and French fries, have some champagne and fried chicken or Cremant and fried chicken. So to me, that's another good pairing. So that's it.
I mean, champagne and fried anything is just like the perfect culinary yin and yang. The richness and fattiness of anything fried with the beautiful acid of champagne, that is mouth magic.
Well, I can only speak from my perspective.
In other places.
That's one thing. No, go ahead, Tanisha. I was just saying.
Other people in other countries absolutely think that sugar is an American thing. I've been at tastings and people are like, oh, you know, maybe you won't like this. It's not too sweet. Or maybe you'll like this. It's sweeter. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, why do you think I'll like sweet? They're like, oh, well, you're American. You drink Coca-Cola. And I'm like, oh, okay. Is that what it means? Because I'm American, I drink Coca-Cola, which I kind of don't, but okay. But that's what people think. They think, all right, you are American. You like sweeter things. And I was like, why would I drink Coca-Cola? They're like, oh, well, Americans just like sweeter things. And even when tasting different things here, like Heinz ketchup here in France tastes different than Heinz ketchup in America. It's not as sweet. It's just like the flavor is different. Yeah. So that is something. Things are just made different in different places. And people think of Americans and they think you like sweet things because you drink Kool-Aid and you drink pop and you drink. These are the things you drink. So this is, and you know, you eat certain things.
Yeah, that's the weirdest thing. I agree completely. I actually wrote an article about that because I am not a person that particularly likes sugar. So that reaction is always interesting to me. But, you know, like, so now here you are in Paris. Like, now you're a girl in Paris. Talk to us about how you ended up in Paris.
The opportunity presented itself. There was someone that I knew who was teaching a course in Paris, teaching a wine course, and they couldn't teach it anymore. They were like, hey, Tanisha, I remember you saying you might want to live in another place and you have experience teaching wine. Can you teach my courses for a semester? Because I can't do it. And I was like, well, I looked around. I was like, I just got out of a relationship. That's devastating. I'm not working right now and I need to move out of this house. So I literally have nothing keeping me where I am. So, okay, girl. Yes, let's. Mm-hmm. Yes, I can teach your class. And so that's how I got to Paris.
Yes. Stay ready so you never have to get ready. You know, a lot of people don't realize that opportunity is not something that normally sends advance notice that it's going to show up. So when an opportunity presents itself, you have to really like either make a decision. I'm going to go with this, whether I feel ready or not, or I'm not. And I'm going to let this opportunity that might never show up again pass me by. So that is so dope.
Absolutely. Like, that's it. I was ready. And it was a perfect time. I mean, I felt like I was in a tailspin and was ready to jump off a building. But then it was like, no, all of these things have fallen apart. So you could do this one thing. You could be available and open to do this other thing. And so it was, I was like, all right, let's go to Paris. Nothing's holding me back. I packed a suitcase and a backpack. And I was like, all right, I'm out. And there's that. I flew over.
Yay! Leslie has now joined us. Hey, Leslie.
Hello.
Okay, so we're talking about how would you best, like, what's your approach to introducing someone to a new wine that they haven't had before?
Great question. I think you have to meet them where they are. So you can't start off with, I can't even think of it right now, but you can't start off with a really complex, let's say, a Rhone, and expect somebody who has just started to venture into drier wines to enjoy it. You got to find out what they like and then slowly start to introduce them to other things because they just may not know. And, you know, we've always talked about how wine can be intimidating. And that's the last thing you want to do is run off somebody who's interested in learning and developing their palate.
Yeah, I mean, I think that people generally also categorize intimidating as something just, sometimes it's not intimidating, it's unknown. And I think that the more comfortable we can make people, the less like intimidation turns into curiosity. And I think that's the goal of what we're all trying to do.
Right.
Yep.
All right, Gliss. So like, we know that you love wine, but how did you get into pivoting, like getting into wine as a business, doing tastings and all of that stuff? Talk to us a little bit about that journey.
I think that's a great question. And I appreciate you asking that. It's funny that you asked me to speak of this. I think it was Tanisha that passed along a contact because, again, she was moving to Paris or had already gone to Paris. And there was the Parks Department that was having a tasting. And Tanisha said, Glennis, can you do this tasting? And it was in, it was at Bowie State on their parking lots and field. It was a Maryland event. And I'll never forget the first thing when I started doing, when I do tastings and the majority of the audience are people of color, the first thing I say is, do not think sweet. It is what it is. I just, because your mind, if your mind is telling your palate what to expect, and what your mind is expecting and your palate doesn't receive it, then it's going to be offensive. So the first thing I was telling them, I said, don't think sweet. This is a bone dry red or white, but see if you can discern some of the characteristics of it and make sure... And also so that you are not offended by it. Once they started thinking that it's not sweet or expecting that it's sweet, they were more acceptable of tasting something different. The actual wines itself, I think the first wine that I really started letting people taste out of their comfort zone I think I used a red Zin it was Seven Deadly Zins. And that's how I started bringing friends, moving on to a separate part of the conversation. I started bringing girlfriends along to tasting wines outside of their comfort zone and using that same paradigm. Don't think sweet, but think how this red Zin is full body, it's fruit forward, but it's not so tannic and acid forward that it's offensive to your palate. And I have transformed some palates. I do have friends who would only drink sweet wines at one point till they started hanging out with me. I was like, oh, don't order that. You are embarrassing me. Don't order that. Let's try this. Here's this. Taste this. And they're now drinking bigger and bolder reds. Now, will I set a pinotage down in front of some of them? Absolutely not. But even when I do it,
I don't like pinotage.
You don't like pinotage?
I love it. This is a whole other conversation, Shakira. We need to get into that.
You don't like pinotage?
Oh, girl. Because when I do tasties, I tell people all the time, don't be turned off by the nose because your palate's going to love it, but your nose might not. So, try it. So hold your breath, get it in your mouth.
Her nose and your nose in your mouth. Don't like it.
I know. Get it in your mouth without smelling it first. Because you know what we're taught when we take these certifications. You swirl, smell, taste. When you taste in pinotage, swirl, hold your breath, taste, and then open your nose. Because then you're like, oh my God, this is so good on the palate. And you're not turning your brain off.
I will continue to drink it because my palate has been changed on things, but open mouth, closed mouth, I just don't love it. Okay, so I love playing this game with everyone. Don't think about your answer, just go for it. Sarita, it's a bad day. Things have gone terribly wrong. Nothing's gone right. What are you drinking?
Oh, I've been asked this question before, and I think my answer is still going to be the same. It's actually going to be a local wine. It's going to be a Bordeaux style blend from local winery, Black Ankle Vineyards, called Crumbling Rock. It is big. It is earthy. It is in your face. You can't forget it. And I would drink a big ass wine like that because it is a distraction from my entire horrible day. So that's what I would drink.
All right. So Glennis, everything has gone right in the day. Like from the moment you woke up to the moment you laid back down, everything that could have gone in your favor went your way. What are you drinking to celebrate an absolutely magnificent
day? It is definitely a sparkling wine. And more than likely, it's a Cremant. If it's a special occasion, a very, very special occasion, it's Belle Epoque, Perrier Jouet. I got some downstairs. I'm popping that for my 55th. So that's going to be a special, special occasion. But it is definitely sparkling wine, and it will be a Cremant. And I keep bottles and bottles of Cremant on hand. And just to piss Leslie off, I do keep some Sauvignon Blanc too, which is like, yum.
Tanisha don't like it either, child.
Yeah, it's canceled. No. I won't talk about it. I don't have to slander it. It will never come out.
Oh, I love
mouth.
It. No.
Never discuss it.
Oh my gosh. Perfect. Okay, Tanisha, this is a great time for the next question. There is a grape that has to disappear from the earth, never again to be made into wine or consumed. What is it?
Listen, let's see. I'm like, y'all just had a full conversation about it. Y'all talked about it. I could fully live my life without ever drinking that again. And I feel bad because people love Sancerre. People love Terrain Blanc. I'm good if I don't taste that again.
I love Sancerre.
Sambri, oh, yeah. I don't know.
Yes,
girl.
Crazy.
Yes. I don't pass. Yes, girl.
Oh,
yes.
My God. Sancerre.
Full mouth of grass. Can I ask why
you don't like
it? I don't know.
Gas. I am clutching my pearls. What has the great grape done to you? I will not have this blasphemy. I will stand as the attorney for Sauvignon Blanc in this court of shame.
I'll just drink Chablis. Like, there are other things that work.
I'm still team Sauvignon Blanc, especially Sancerre. Oh, my gosh.
All right. It seems like technology. Looks like we've lost Leslie. But before we wrap up, ladies, thank you so much for being here. I want to make sure that our listeners know exactly where to follow you. So, Sarita, where can people follow you?
Hey, everybody. You can follow me at Vine Me Up on all social media. And I am the voice behind the Swirl Sweet podcast online, on social media. So that's at Swirl Sweet.
Awesome. Okay, Glennis, where can people follow you?
Hello, everybody. Have a great day, great evening, wherever you are in the world. I can be located at Vino Noir on all social media and also at Irie Wine on Facebook.
And last but not least, Tanisha, let people know where they can follow you.
You can find me literally everywhere at Girl Meets Glass.
All right, guys. Cheers.
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 My glass empty down.
Cheers. Cheers.
All right. Oh, thank you so much to our esteemed guests, the squad from the Swirl Suite. And thank you guys for listening to another episode of A Glass for Every Palate. I love you for listening, and we'll talk to you next week. Bye.